This is National Council of Jewish Women interviewing Ann Copeland in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. This is May 6, 1991. The interviewers are Harold Kimball and Judy Rubenstein. Ann, would you like to tell us when you were born and your early life?
I was born quite a few years ago. I'm a senior citizen. You want to know something about
where
my early
life?
I was born in Russia and came over here when I was a little girl.
What part of Russia?
It was, the name of it was Yekaterinoslavsky Guberna, Marupolskaya Yezda. I've learned that. It's a small town where my people lived.
Where was it near?
It was near Yekaterinoslav. That was a nice city.
Okay.
Where was it near?
Was
it near Minsk or somewhere?
No, I don't know any of those. Cool.
How many siblings were in your family?
There were six of us, three girls and three boys. My father was a tailor by trade. He worked in a little town, a German town in Russia, full of Germans, and he used to outfit the entire community and come home in a week or two, and they used to call him Father Abram. My father's name was Avraham Asher, and he had a very good relationship with them. Although my father was a tailor by trade, he was a poet. He wrote poems all his life and published two small books of poetry in Yiddish. His poetry is of a very high grade. In fact, the poet laureate, Chaim Nachman Bialik, read my father's poetry and told my brother that he should do that and that only. However, my father had to make a living for his wife and six children. My mother was a very beautiful woman.
What was her name?
Her name was Freda Rachel. Frieda Rachel. Freda Rachel. Frieda Rachel.
And her maiden name?
Vinik. V-I-N-I-K. And my father adored her. Whenever he left the house, the neighbors could hear him say, "Nu, Freda Rachel, sei gesund." She worked very, very hard because in that small town, there weren't any of the facilities that you have in the city. Brother, the oldest brother, Boris, showed a great talent in painting. In fact, they saw him one day looking in a mirror and painting his own portrait, and it was just like him, so they knew that he really had talent. So although my people did not have a great deal of money, in fact, they would just make a living, they sent my brother to Odessa to live with a sister of my father's, the only sister he had. Mm-hmm. And he went to art school from there. And he remained there even after my family decided to come to America. There were nephews of ours here, and they insisted that my parents take the family and bring them to America. My brother went to school, to art school, and he did very, very well. But there were always pogroms in Europe. And one day, when he was coming home from school with his papers and the art paraphernalia, whatever he had to carry, they stopped him and they said, he's a Jew. We'll have to do something about it. Then they looked at him, and there was one man. He said, "Look, he's an artist. Let's leave him alone. But we have to punish him some way." So they cut off all his beautiful curly hair.
Aww.
And my brother remained there for quite many years. I really don't know how many. And then he came to America.
When he went to art school, about when, what year would that be?
I am not very good at, and there were two other members of the family, I'm sorry to say they're gone now, or I would have been able to get you some dates.
You said he went to school in Odessa. Did your family live far from Odessa?
It was quite far.
Like,
yes.
300
Odessa,
miles?
At least. Uh-huh. Odessa was one of the most beautiful cities on the Black Sea. And when I mentioned Chaim Nachman Bialik before, how did my brother happen to meet this man, this very wonderful poet laureate of the Jewish people? He lived at that dacha. Bialik did. But my brother was giving lessons to the owner of this dacha. A dacha is a resort, and this was a beautiful resort on the Black Sea. So that's how he met Bialik. And every time my father would read a poem, write a poem, he would send it to his son, who was, by that time, he showed great, great promise of becoming a very good artist.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, he was considered a famous artist in his later years.
How do you spell dacha?
Dacha?
Yeah.
I think it would only be D-A-C-H-A.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I'm not sure. Have you got that turned off?
That's all right.
No.
We'll look forward to hearing more about Bialik and some of the poetry. We want to talk about some of the early years first. What other siblings?
I had two sisters, uh-huh. and there were three boys.
And how did you fit in the, how, were you in the middle?
Well, no, I was, there were two after me.
Mm-hmm.
And,
Four boys?
No, three boys and three girls.
Oh, three girls.
The other members of the family, they were all fairly artistic in one way or another. Like my brother, Joseph, who lived in this city, he used to invent things. When we manufactured windows, he invented things to do for that.
Mm-hmm.
And
go ahead.
Yeah. My brother Boris, when he came to this city, to Pittsburgh, or to Rochester, New York, our family moved to Rochester.
Wait,
New York.
Can we just stay in the Soviet Union for a few minutes?
I don't know. I don't know much about it. That's
okay. You can't
remember. I
really
don't. No.
Were most of your families from the Soviet Union, or did they come from another area before that?
No, they were all from the Soviet Union.
For many generations?
Yes. Yes.
Uh-huh.
And as you notice, we have a Russian name. Kublanov is a very... well, I don't know if it was a common name, but it's definitely a Russian name.
Mm-hmm.
And my brother Boris never had to change his name because his name was Boris Abramovich Kublanov. In Russia, you use the middle name. Your middle name is your father's name. Abramovich. My father's name was Abraham.
Uh-huh. Okay.
But we moved to... You see, I don't know much about my other background. And we moved to Rochester, New York, because that's where nephews of ours lived.
Mm-hmm.
And it was tough going because my father had to get a job, which he did, and he still did his tailoring.
Mm-hmm.
However, he kept writing poetry every minute he ever got. Would you like to hear about how his book was published?
Please.
We belong to Temple Bethel, which is a conservative temple.
Where?
In Rochester, New York.
Can you give us around the date that we're talking about?
I could see when his book was published.
Okay.
I think it was 1919. Remember I said I wasn't very good at dates.
Mm-hmm.
It's in there.
No, the books are all in Yiddish?
Yes, they're all in Yiddish.
Copyright was 1935. So we obviously wrote this
way, way before then.
Much
in fact,
some
of his poems are dated 1800 something.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Okay. Because
he wrote since he was a young man.
Okay, because I see that the printing was done in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, the Berger Printing Company.
Although we lived in Rochester, my brother lived in Pittsburgh, and there were no Yiddish printers in Rochester.
Oh.
And they did the printing here in Pittsburgh.
Oh, I see.
And now there are some poems that the dates are on them. And incidentally, I don't like to say that about Pittsburgh, but they did Rochester, 1889, this one. So some of the poems are, he says in his preface, he says that most of his poems are a generation old. These aren't all recent poems.
Oh, well, he obviously didn't write that in Rochester in 1889.
No,
right.
Of course not. See, he wrote, as I said, he wrote all his life.
Uh-huh.
And some of them are recent. Now, the poem I'm going to recite for you was written when Israel was declared a state. And that isn't even in the book, because the book had already been printed. And he came about writing this because one of the principal of the Sunday school, who was a very bright man, he...
Do you remember his name?
No, I don't. Okay. He wanted to come to the house and have my father read some of his poems. And then they invited the rabbi too, and they almost hit the ceiling because they couldn't get over such poetry. They said, "Mr. Kablana, that has to go into print. You can't just let that go." So that's how it came about. And he never sold any of the books, but he did send them to special people. And it's something to treasure the rest of our lives.
Did you speak Yiddish in the home all the time?
Yiddish and English, although my parents did not speak English too well.
When you still lived in Russia?
Rochester.
No, when Russia. Still lived in Russia,
did
you speak...
I don't remember anything about that.
Oh, okay. Did you grow up speaking Yiddish?
Yes.
As a child?
We spoke Yiddish in the house.
Uh-huh.
Yes, and thank the Lord I can still speak Yiddish. I have never forgotten it. I think it's a very beautiful language. And right now, it's being taught in 62 colleges in the United States.
Wow.
Really? Yiddish?
Yes. I read it, and I have an article somewhere where it tells that 62 colleges. Yes.
Did you come from a very religious home, Ann?
We were an observant religious family, but not fanatically so. We were never told not to turn the lights on or not to take a shower. Mm-hmm. We observed the kashrut, and I still do.
Mm-hmm.
And all the women in our family observed it in their homes. But we went to services all the time. I started going to services on the Sabbath since I was a little girl, and still do every Sabbath, because we like the music and we like the service and the tradition. But we were not fanatic in our religion. We were not, we were Orthodox, but I don't know whether I should call it a modern Orthodox, or we didn't have any of the ways that very religious Orthodox people do.
Oh, where do you belong now?
I belong to Tree of Life, which is a conservative synagogue. Not as traditional as the one that was in Rochester. And I still get my bulletin from the Rochester And I've been gone from there for 45 years.
Wow.
They still sent. And when my father was 80 years of age, the temple gave a dinner in his honor and invited, two men paid for a dinner, invited 160 people.
Wow.
To honor him. And he also was honored by the Zionist organization. There were reporters, and it was a very special affair. And I recited the poetry.
Well, I was the, see, yes. We have no dates.
Yes. Do you have an idea about when that would be?
Let me see.
Where was he honored? What city?
He was honored in Rochester, New York, when he was 80 years of age. Let me see what that would be about. It would be somewhere around perhaps 1950.
And how old did he live to be?
91. He lived to 91. My mother lived to 75, but my father lived to 91. Mm-hmm. He was always the gabbai in mm-hmm. the shul. I have a write-up about him here.
Very nice to see. This is his.
Another one.
This is his obituary.
Yes, when he passed away.
Uh-huh.
Rabbi Karp, who was very well known mm-hmm. all over the United States, he's published so many books, and who was here at Temple Sinai as scholar in residence, mm-hmm. he performed the eulogy. And the eulogy was something that everyone said they have never heard. It was all done with parts of his poems.
Oh, how lovely.
But it was left at the temple, and that temple burned down, and I never got it. And I feel so badly about that. But he did it all with the parts of the poem.
Hmm. Would you like to read his obituary?
If you'd like.
I think it's very interesting.
I don't know which one to read.
This was...
I don't know which one is better. I think this...
Okay.
No, this one, I think.
Okay. This is your father's obituary, which was on May 27th, 1959.
That's right. Last rite set today for Zionist poet, 91. A funeral service for Abraham M. Koblanov, 91, poet, ardent Zionist, and a leader in Jewish community affairs, will be held at 1 p.m. today in the Nussbaum Funeral Home, 658 Main Street East. Mr. Koblanov, a retired tailor, died yesterday, May 27, 1959, in the Jewish home and infirmary. He formerly resided at 999 Garson Avenue. His two volumes of poems in Yiddish were published in 1935 and 1947. Built upon strong Zionist themes, the poems look towards the rebuilding of Palestine and establishment of the State of Israel. Rabbi Abraham Karp of Temple Beth El said the poems display a deep piety and boundless love of his people. Rabbi Karp praised Mr. Koblanov as a spiritual and cultural force in the Rochester Jewish community. Mr. Koblanov, for many years, was a member of Beth HaMedrash HaGodol and Beth El congregation. He was a native of Russia and came here 45 years ago.
Thank you.
Wait a minute, what is this? Although he retired when he was about 80, Mr. Koblanov had remained active in the community life until about a year ago. And then it's he leaves three sons, Joseph and Hyman, both of Pittsburgh, and Boris of Old Lyme, Connecticut. Three daughters, Mrs. Harry Cohen, Rochester, New York, Mrs. Arnold Copeland of Pittsburgh, and Mrs. H.L. Foreman of Brooklyn. Six grandchildren, eight grandchildren. I think that's just about
it. Very nice.
And the other one, 5 and 47. That part I know. 47.
I found it very interesting that he was always hoping and working toward the founding of Palestine and the Jewish homeland. Could you tell us a little more about that and why he felt so strongly?
My father was a very dedicated Zionist. Mm-hmm. When anything happened to Israel, it was like Yom Kippur in our house. Very sad and very, and even tears. But he always felt that Palestine must be rebuilt and must be the Jewish state. And he really, it couldn't have been brought up that way because he was an orphan. And he had a grandmother taking care of him. In fact, she was a blind woman. And it was just that he himself, by reading, he read everything, by reading, he felt so strongly about his people. And all his children have really followed in that course. And most all of his poems, in the other article it tells about mm-hmm. that, they're almost all about the Jewish people, about his feeling towards Judaism, about his feeling towards his people and towards the state. When in Rochester there was a Zionist convention and the churches were playing the Hatikvah, mm-hmm. and my father would write a poem when something would come to his mind that had something to do with that moment or that period. And he wrote a poem about that, and he had hoped that in the future that others will not have to ring the church bells. We'd ring our own for our estate.
Did your mother share that very deep commitment?
My mother shared everything that my father believed in. She was very busy bringing up her family. There was no help. And there was always cooking and baking, and she every Saturday afternoon, my father would get all the papers we used to get to Tog, and he would read to her instead of her reading herself. He would read, and that's how they used to spend their Saturdays. It was a very Jewish home, I would say. Did he what?
In his tailor shop. Did he have a shop, or did he do it at home?
He worked at home, I believe. When he came to this country, of course, he worked for someone.
Oh.
In fact, he worked for a company that made the most expensive clothing. Rochester was a city where they manufactured very good clothing. I can't just think of some of the names, but they were very famous names. And this was a kind of a specialty shop. The name of it was Knopf's.
Uh-huh.
And they used to make vicuna coats and that kind of for movie stars and so on. And the owners respected my father a great deal, and they were very proud to have a man like that working for them. And
did he help to make things or to tailor things?
When he was in Europe, he would outfit the families. Mm-hmm. But when he came here, everybody had a certain part to do. And I remember that he had to make the collars, which was a very important part of a garment. And I think that's all I can say.
Mm-hmm. Will you tell us part of when you came to the United States, your adjustment and your early life here?
I didn't really have to adjust much because when you're a little kid,
uh-huh.
We were all just 2 years apart, like.
Uh-huh.
And after we were old enough to go to school, we went to school, and we just lived a normal life like all the children here do. But my brother Boris was still in Europe,
mm-hmm.
and he finally came here. And
do you have any idea what year that might have been?
It was after It must have been after the Second War. It was after
Were
the
you
Second
worried
War.
About him during 19, the war?
Well, what year would that be? 1946?
It was 1946?
I think it was around there, yes.
Well, did you have much contact with him during the war?
We had contact with him all the time.
Oh.
But he studied there, and when he came here, he did some paintings for some very important people in the city of Rochester. Mm-hmm. But he felt that his place would be in New York. And he had an agent, and that agent made believe he was the artist. That's how they did it. You never really knew, unless you sat for the guy, who painted the portrait. And my brother had paintings in the DuPont homes under this other man's name.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Do you remember the other man's name?
No, but he did look like Jesus Christ. He really did. I saw his painting. He looked just like him with the beard.
Are you talking about the time your brother was in Pittsburgh or Rochester?
No, in New York City.
Oh, he moved to New York?
He moved to New York City, yes. And then finally he started getting orders on his own. He had this little girl that I have here. He had her to show, you know, the type of work he did. And he specialized in portraits, and he has a painting in the RCA boardroom.
Oh.
And
what is the painting of?
This Mr. Folsom, who was the chairman at that time of the RCA, he was the chairman. My brother did his painting. And of course, most people don't realize that, but hardly anybody sits that long for painting. They do part of it through knowing you, and they do part of it through a portrait. Mm-hmm. Through a picture.
Mm-hmm.
President of RCA, did you say? Mm-hmm.
He was the chairman, mm-hmm. Mr. Folsom, his name was. I remember that.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And he would get commissions by recommendations. And that's how he happened to paint this general. They wanted a painting. The general, of course, was dead.
Uh-huh.
But they wanted a painting for this gallery.
For General Duffy,
I see. Yes. He was a very important man in the United States military.
And this, your brother painted a portrait of him. I see this is in, the dedication was in 1930. So
you must have come over.
Maybe after World War One or something?
Maybe it must have been after World War One. Uh-huh. I thought it was after World War Two, but it couldn't be.
It was 1930.
Yes.
And Boris Capuano. And he painted a portrait of Brigadier General Edward Duffy.
And he was made a member of the regiment. Is it the 69th Regiment? I believe it is.
Yes.
Yes.
In New
I
York.
I remember that.
And it looks to me that perhaps Brigadier General was in the Spanish-American War because the colonel was in, he was a lieutenant colonel in 1896 and a colonel in 1898.
Uh-huh.
This could be, there's Duffy Square in New York City. Perhaps it was named for this.
I don't think so.
General,
think it was.
No?
And maybe it was, but this is in a gallery, and I got to get there sometime.
It is hanging in the armory, or at the time, the dedication was at the armory at 26th Street in Lexington Avenue. Of course, that was 1930.
Yeah,
we're not sure where it is now.
Yeah, you wouldn't even know where it is now,
uh-huh.
Perhaps. But he lived in here in the United States. He moved to Lyme, Connecticut,
mm-hmm.
which is an artist colony, and he had a very beautiful studio there. And he has many portraits of people here in the city. He made one of Mr. Schreiber, Sam Schreiber,
mm-hmm.
who had the big trucking company, and his daughter, the very elegant painting of his daughter. Now, Mr. Schreiber contacted...
His daughter, Esther?
Esther.
Oh!
Yeah, and okay. It's a long gown of a beautiful painting. And Mr. Schreiber contacted all kinds of artists, even the artist that painted Queen Elizabeth. And he went to the studio to make sure that my brother was the artist, because, as I said, there are a lot of agents who pose as an artist. And
Were those paintings made in Pittsburgh?
They were done in his studio.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
But he had to get, you know, measure their head, get their hair, and so mm-hmm. on. And that's the way, because my brother took months to complete a painting. He didn't just paint it up. When you saw the painting of the hair, take a look at it. You'll see it. It's so natural.
Mm-hmm.
He painted like the old masters, not like modern painting. And he had several exhibits around that section. My rabbi, Alvin Birkin, mm-hmm. comes from that part of the city. And he knew of the name, but he did not even dream that he was Jewish, because there are very few Jewish people around Lyme, Connecticut,
mm-hmm.
or any of those little small towns.
Is he still alive?
No, my brother passed away in 1981.
Did we identify, what was his name?
Boris Kublanov.
Boris Kublanov.
With a K?
K-U-B-L-A-N-O-V.
Died in what year?
In 1981. He died 6 months after my husband.
And tell us more about some of your early life.
Well, when I came to this city...
Rochester.
I came to Rochester. I married a Rochester man. And
what year were you married? Well, let's hear about your early life first.